WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
2 years ago, Sotheby's Art Auction House sold the Vincent van Gogh painting Irises for $53.9 million, making it the most expensive painting ever sold. The second half of the 1980s has brought an art market boom in nearly everything: old masters, impressionist art, contemporary art, modern painting, American furniture. This art market boom was the cover story of last week's Time magazine. The article was written by art critic Robert Hughes, who warned that the soaring prices were benefiting dealers and auctioneers, but museums and therefore the public were the losers. My guest, John Marion, is the chairman and chief auctioneer of Sotheby's, the world's largest art auction house. He was born into the business. His father was a founder of Park Bernay. Marion has presided over the sale of Andy Warhol's estate, the Elizabeth Taylor diamond, and Van Gogh's irises. He's written a new book called The Best of Everything. It's a guide for collectors. On November 15th, Marion presided over a large auction at Sotheby's. I asked him if there were any new records set that night.
Oh, yes, there were lots of records set. I guess the most remarkable one of all was the fact that in about a two-hour period, we sold $269 million worth of paintings. And then the next day followed up with another about $50 or $60 million worth of works of art.
And what were some of the most surprising prices that you got?
Well, the Picasso Ola Panagil brought $40,700,000, and that was bought by Ambassador Annenberg for his marvelous collection. There was another fabulous Picasso of 1932 called The Mirror, and that brought just over $26 million. I think there were something like 50 works of art in that two-day period, which brought individually over $1 million.
Now, the de Kooning Interchange, didn't that set a new record for contemporary art?
Yes, that was the week before, actually. Oh. And that brought $20 million.
What do you think are some of the reasons that prices have been soaring throughout the 80s in the art market?
Well, I think, first of all, there's a lot of money available for spending on works of art. I think the difference in currencies around the world, the different relative values of currencies have changed a lot. For example, the yen vis-a-vis the dollar is probably double what it was 4 or 5 years ago. And so, therefore, the relative spending value of these currencies is changed. And then finally, we have been seeing the price levels really attract onto the market very, very important works of art of great rarity. And when you have things like that coming on the market with a good deal of money and the other factors I've mentioned, you're gonna find record prices.
Now, some people think that these record prices are good for dealers, good for the auctioneers, but bad for museums because museums are finding it very hard to be competitive in this period of soaring art prices. I'm wondering if you're concerned about that at all, that museums aren't able to bid for some of the best paintings.
Well, it's not quite true. Museums have bid for some of the best paintings. The Getty Museum, for example, in the last year and a half or so has bought a Manet for $24 million, a Potomac for $32 million, and a Renoir for $19 million. And on the other side of the ledger, that same museum has sold, in fact, sold yesterday in London at Sotheby's, about $16 million worth of paintings that they would not be showing any longer. So there's a refining process going on. And I think that's a trend we have seen with a lot of museums. The Museum of Modern Art has just recently purchased a very important Van Gogh and deaccessioned a number of paintings that they wouldn't really see the light of day from their storage rooms, including three paintings that we sold in the last sale in New York that brought, I think, $8 or $9 million.
Actually, some people think that that's part of the problem, that museums now are being forced to sell parts of their permanent collection in order to buy new pieces, and that the permanent collections are becoming somewhat impermanent because of that.
Well, I think that's a short-sighted view because an awful lot of things are held by museums that never will be really shown. And in my view, these things should be out circulating in the world of collectors. and the things that and the museum should be striving to enrich their collections and find things which really will be of interest and will show to better advantage to the public.
John Marion is my guest, and he is the chairman and chief auctioneer at Sotheby's and the author of the new book, The Best of Everything, The Insider's Guide to Collecting for Every Taste and Every Budget. I'm sure you've seen that recent cover story in Time magazine by the art critic Robert Hughes. I'd like to quote something that he said and get your reaction to it. He wrote that contemporary art has become quite simply currency. The market burns off all nuances of meaning and has begun to function like a computer-driven investment on Wall Street. What do you think about that? Do you think that contemporary art is becoming currency and that it's losing its nuances of meaning because of the investment quality?
Well, I think for one thing, Mr. Hughes doesn't like the commercial art market. That's pretty obvious. I don't know. You know, he has his own views, and I guess he would like to see everything wind up in a museum. As far as I'm aware, people buy works of art because they love the works of art and they want to be involved with them. They do not buy them. They're not financial instruments. They don't buy them, in my opinion, for investment. Obviously, when things are worth the kind of money they are today, people have to consider that there is a financial side to owning these objects. But the top three things that have ever been sold, and I have been the auctioneer for all three of them, have been bought by collectors who bought them because they are collectors.
Does it ever happen, like when someone buys, say, a $40 million Picasso, where do they hang it? when something costs that much, what do you do with it? Do you ever see people who buy something for that much money and end up storing it in a vault because it's too valuable to keep anyplace else?
No, I don't think that's the case at all. In the case of the $40 million Picasso that we have just recently sold, it was bought by Ambassador Walter Annenberg, and it will fit beautifully into his already staggeringly important collection. And as a matter of fact, when you think about his collection, which is going to be shown next summer in the National Gallery in Washington, and this last year was shown in the Philadelphia Museum, that collection has something like five Van Goghs, a very, very important Renoir, wonderful Gauguins, and the one thing that was really missing from that collection was an important Picasso, and now it is no longer missing.
Robert Rauschenberg, the artist who has had many things sell for quite a bit of money lately, he thinks that artists should have a share in the profits, which they don't currently. He's proposed legislation to that effect that has not gotten through. Where do you stand on that issue?
Well, I think there have been efforts to legislate this sort of thing. Some years ago, there was a law passed in California which required a percentage of any sale to go to living artists. And what really happened was the artist that didn't need the money would get the money, and the artist who did need the money did not get anything because their works didn't bring very much money. It's almost a thing which is not enforceable. There's such a there's a public marketplace, which is what I'm involved with, but then there's a private marketplace where there's no record of sales, and it would be impossible to really legislate these things. And Mr. Rauschenberg and Jasper Johns and Lichtenstein and the rest have seen tremendous increases in the things that they have created before and sold before, but that has a rub-off effect, and Mr. Rauschenberg is currently having a very successful sale here in New York. And I think his current works, which are much admired, are feeling some of the appreciation that his past works have affected.
You were the auctioneer at the record-breaking sale of Van Gogh's Irises. This was in 1987. It sold for $53.9 million. I believe that still holds the record for the most expensive painting ever sold.
Mm-hmm.
Would you describe the auction itself, what the bidding was like, especially toward the end as you were nearing that final price?
Well, it was a very electrically charged atmosphere, and if you'll recall, to put it in perspective, this happened 3 weeks after October the 19th, and everybody was sort of worried about what the art market was going to do vis-a-vis the stock market.
Yeah, this was the 19th was the day of the stock market crash.
Exactly. And so on that particular night, I remember writing in my catalog $41 million because that would mean that in any currency in the world, the irises would be the record-setting painting. And I remember very well when it went over $41 million, there was a little smile came across my face. And I can also recall the kind of tension in the room and the audience gasping as each increase came, and I think they were going at the time in million-dollar or half-million-dollar increments. And as we got up to the hammer price of $48 million and then finally $49 million, I mean, people seemed to be wondering if it would ever stop. And then the hammer came down at 49, and there was a tremendous sense of release on the part of everybody in the audience. And then when you add the 10% buyer's premium on, that's how you get to the $53.9 million. But it was an absolutely wonderful event.
Now, I believe the final two bidders were both bidding by telephone?
That's right.
So how do you orchestrate this when you've got two people who aren't even there bidding?
Well, just think if they weren't there at all. The room itself holds about 1,200 people for one of those big sales, and we can have as many as 40 or 50 telephones operating, and it's an absolutely standard procedure these days. In that particular case, the buyer's agents were actually in the building in a private box overlooking the room and were hooked up to the floor of the sales room by telephone, and I knew that.
I see. Do you think that they knew who the other bidder was, that each knew who the other was?
No, and they don't yet.
Oh, really?
No.
So you're the one who knows. You knew, right?
I know, right.
And does the personality of the bidder affect the way you handle it?
I think it can at times. There are, you know, having been in the business for as long as I have and handled so many of these sales, I do know an awful lot of the customers. And know their bidding habits and know maybe if they might be tempted to go for another bid if you gave them an extra moment or two to think about it. So, yes, it does change with the individuals.
This might be a naive question, but you said before that the bids were going up in increments of a half million or a million.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's the bidder who decides on what the increment is, or it's the auctioneer?
The auctioneer.
Okay. So how did you decide on a half million or a million?
It's an instinctive thing, and you know, you can't have an advance so large in proportion to the price that it's unreasonable. On the other hand, you can't have advances that are so small that they would detract from the sort of dignity or order of the sale. So I set the levels of increment, and I must say that I have very few, if any, complaints.
Well, let me ask you, after the Van Gogh irises was sold for the $53.9 million, was there something else to auction after that, or did you call it a night?
No, that was about, a third of the way through the sale, and we had a lot more to go after, but it is a little bit hard to refocus.
There's actually a recent controversy surrounding the $53.9 million sale of Van Gogh's irises. The painting was bought by the Australian billionaire Alan Bond, and it was recently revealed that Sotheby's loaned him about half of the auction price. And the controversy is, should auction houses basically provide a mortgage for paintings at the auction? And if they do that, is it helping to drive up the price of the painting, consequently providing not only higher prices, but also more of a percentage in profits for the auction house? What do you think? I mean, it was your house that did it.
Well, I think obviously it's fine.
Right, obviously you think it's fine, right.
What's your question?
Well, was it your decision to loan the money?
Not my decision solely.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's a policy of the company that we have been very upfront and public about, that we do provide financial services, and that includes advances to people that want to sell. It includes the possibility of people financing a purchase following the sale. And it also can include loans to people with collections who are not interested in selling at the moment. It is something that we feel is a very positive move for the art market, and has been a very, very popular thing for us to do. Very few people in the money lending business would have the wherewithal or the understanding of the value of works of art or how to dispose of them. And we do have that special knowledge. And when you think of it, there are so many things in life, possessions that people have that are and can be financed. In fact, virtually everything is, except works of art, because the lending institutions don't have really the sophistication or the wherewithal to be able to loan money on these things.
Is it typical for you to loan half the cost of a painting?
Yes, that's a standard thing.
Let's talk a little bit about the process of the auction. When you're auctioning off a painting or jewelry or collectibles, how do you decide where the bidding's going to start?
Well, I start generally at a percentage of the estimate. Now, each object that we offer in a catalog has a printed estimate attached to it. The general rule of thumb is to start at about a half the low estimate. So that's something which is known by the audience and sort of an understood thing in the art market.
How quickly do you speak when you're auctioning?
Well, I think what you're thinking of is the tobacco auctioneers that used to sell Lucky Strikes, and you would be able to understand me very easily. It's more of a normal voice than that speed rigs type thing that you used to hear.
Would you describe your style as an auctioneer?
I hope it's very personable, and I hope I have great rapport with the audience. They tell me I do. I want to be someone who is understood and understandable, and so that everyone in the audience feels they have a fair chance of buying whatever the object is, and that everyone is fairly represented.
What are the options someone interested in buying something has in terms of the way they place their bids, you know, whether they use a paddle or a gesture or whatever?
Well, if they're going to bid live at the auction, they have to make their first bid very obvious to the auctioneer. After that, they can be more subtle. The easiest thing of all is just raise the paddle.
Now, explain what the paddle is.
The paddle is when people come to the auction, they register with us beforehand and identify themselves and with credit cards or driver's licenses or a Sotheby account if they have that. And then they're issued a numbered paddle. And then that paddle serves to identify them during the auction. And it also keeps the billing straight. So everybody knows, when they have bought something at the sale. If their number is 219, that's the way it works. Other ways people can bid and have bid is through a signal that they arrange with either the auctioneer or a bid caller, and those can be all sorts of things like taking your glasses on or off or crossing your legs or opening the catalog or winking or blinking and nodding and all the rest of it. In order to do something like that, you would have to make a prior arrangement with the auctioneer and specify the lot so that he would be looking at you at that particular moment.
Now, you're able to remember for whom crossing their legs is a signal and for whom it's just a sign of discomfort?
Well, actually what happens is that I would make a note in my catalog.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I got to that lot, I would look at them.
Okay.
And it's a prearranged thing for a specific lot. I couldn't look at somebody all day long and watch them cross or uncross their legs or just see somebody cross his legs and think it was a bid. That would not work.
Did you ever make a mistake and think that a gesture was meant as a bid when it wasn't? Did you ever actually sell a piece to someone who wasn't bidding on it?
No, I think that's really a popular story, and it's a humorous thing when it happens at an auction when somebody waves to a friend and, you look down at them and say, if you keep waving, you're going to go home with a painting, and everybody gets a big kick out of that. But in the actual case, they look at you, and you can tell by eye contact if somebody's really interested in bidding, and if they're waving to a friend, they're not looking at you and they're not interested in bidding.
John Marion is my guest, the chief auctioneer and the chairman of Sotheby's. In your book, The Best of Everything, you write that sometimes the subject matter of a painting or sculpture affects the price it's going to get. And
mm-hmm.
that, for instance, angst, pain, violence can all be liabilities when, mm-hmm. when it comes to
right.
setting the value. What does that say about how people put value on art, financial value?
Well, I think it says exactly what I was saying before. I think people buy works of art because they like them. and they buy them because they want to live with these things. There is definitely a difference in value for something which is attractive as opposed to something which is unattractive and difficult to live with. And I think that's just the way the public responds.
What are the trademarks of a bad auctioneer?
Of a bad auctioneer?
Mm-hmm.
I would think somebody who is has a boring voice, a metronome sort of voice that puts the audience to sleep. I mean, the object is to keep the audience awake, after all. Confuses an audience. I think a good auctioneer, to look at it another way, is like a good lecturer, that the audience should be sitting on the edge of their chair leaning forward rather than sitting back and dozing off. The auctioneer should be understandable, and if he's not understandable and confuses the audience, then he has no rapport with the audience. So a bad auctioneer is the opposite of all those things I've said.
Does a good auctioneer get a higher price?
Oh, I think a good auctioneer definitely has an effect on the sale and will, over the course of a sale, not on every item, but over the course of a sale, will affect the total, no doubt about it.
Do you collect anything yourself?
I have lots of interests, and the things that I have collected myself are things like American Federal Furniture, some American paintings. I have a small collection of antiquities, which I cherish. Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay, pleasure.